Welcome to the Breaker.News podcast for December 31st, 2017. Happy New Year. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues and institutions, founded on January 1st, 2017. Help stop secrecy and unravel the spin. Later, I'll tell you how you can join and support The Breaker in 2018. On this episode, regular features such as the Is It Just Me commentary. Around the Rim, we'll look at headlines from around the Pacific Rim. Cascadia Calling, headlines from around the Pacific Northwest. The Big Deal feature. And we'll end with a virtual Nanaimo bar for someone who deserved it this week. Now, Is It Just Me? Is it just me, or have you had enough of people complaining? Have you heard enough opinions in 2017? Perhaps a decade's worth in just 1 year. Opinions from the right, opinions from the left, from those with political interests, from those with business interests. Sometimes the bloviators are hiding their allegiances. Yes, this is a world where there is just not enough justice, not enough equality, not enough peace, not enough love. We need more of all those in 2018. And The Breaker will continue to point out the shortcomings in British Columbia in all those categories. But, for a brief moment, let's take a deep breath and smile. Another year is over and another is to begin. Let's make it mean something. Let's help others do the same. Let's help others take a deep breath and smile. In 2018. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim, where we look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. First stop in the Anchorage Daily News, Annie Zack writes, "These are some of the most Alaska stories of 2017. An 11-year-old Anchorage boy was in his room when a bear crashed in through the window, quote, he was so close I could reach out and touch him, end quote. One October day in Utqiagvik, America's northernmost city, a 450-pound bearded seal was just chilling on the airport runway. The state's transportation department filed it under hashtag Alaska problems. A moose was caught on video charging skiers and snowboarders who were waiting in line for a lift at Alyeska Resort. The next day, it was shot to death. Alaska Airlines retired its Boeing 737-400 combi planes this year. Those planes, which primarily operated in Alaska, had passenger seating in the back and all kinds of freight up front. Feral rabbits are as common in downtown Valdez as squirrels in other parts of the United States, according to a story. Pro-bunny and anti-bunny sentiments across town abound. Apparently, some people think this is a, quote, problem, end quote. And finally, some people in the lower 48 might long for the years of spending Friday night at Blockbuster Video. But here in Alaska, the brand lives on. This story explains just how video stores in Alaska manage to continue in the age of Netflix and even attract people who just come in for the novelty. Yes, they have VHS in Alaska and, of course, Be Kind and Rewind. In Hong Kong's South China Morning Post, from Hollywood to airbases and backyards, why 2018 will be the year of the drone, writes Nicholas Groffman. A fresh diplomatic row broke out in the fall of 2017 between two Himalayan neighbors as Chinese state-run media reported that an Indian drone crashed in Chinese territory. The crash site appeared to have been in or around Doklam, where soldiers from the two sides were locked in a months-long face-off in the summer. It might seem like a one-off, but the crash points to an increase in the use of drones for both military and commercial purposes in recent years. In 2018, however, it looks set to be a period of great expansion in their use, making 2018 the breakout year for drones. The current rate of innovation probably is not sustainable, according to Malik Mirasan of Drone Life magazine, but two factors will propel a massive increase in drone use in 2018. First, there is the tendency towards smarter, safer, cheaper, more autonomous drones. Second, and more important, is that regulators have caught up with drone technology. The UK, China, and several other countries all issued sensible and easily enforceable drone regulations in 2017. These will not slow the market, as some have predicted, but will add the armor of legality to drone purchases and use, which will attract and bring the technology to mainstream buyers. Finally, on this edition of Around the Rim, in the Bangkok Post, Ponzi scammer sentenced to 13,275 years in jail. Yes, that's right. A Ponzi scammer sentenced to 13,275 years in jail. The criminal court sentenced Fudit Kiradlak, 34, to a total of 13,275 years in jail for his pyramid scheme tricking about 2,600 victims out of 574 million baht, which is about 22.2 Canadian million dollars. He will likely serve 20 years since the penal code set that limit for the imprisonment for every offense with the penalty of 3 to 10 years, regardless of counts. Prosecutors told the court that from August 1, 2015 to September 1, 2016, Fudit, his accomplices at large, and his companies, the System Plug and Play and Innovision Holding, organized seminars to invite people to invest in what they claimed were businesses that were involving beauty care, used cars, export, property development, and foreign exchange. 13,275 years. Bernie Madoff might wish that he had committed his pyramid schemes in British Columbia, but he's certainly glad he didn't do it in Thailand. Anyways, that is Around the Rim for this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Time to gather round by the fire. On this, the last edition of the Breaker.News podcast for 2017, we're looking back at the top 10 most read stories in the Breaker of 2017 of the 279 stories that the Breaker published in its first year. These are the stories that the Breaker broke, and with your support, there will be many, many more in 2018. Counting down, number 10 on June 13th, 2017, Laura Miller out of the BC Liberal Party. The Breaker was the first to report that Miller left the BC Liberal Party, where she was executive director. It was the week before the clone speech and 2 weeks before the Liberals were finally toppled in a no-confidence vote. Miller returned to Ontario to battle breach of trust, mischief, and misuse of computers charges against her from her time as Deputy Chief of Staff to Liberal Premier Dalton McGuinty. The breach of trust charge was dropped during the fall trial in Toronto. A verdict is expected in early 2018. Number 9 on the top 10 list, from July 20th, 2017, on campaign eve, Bennett and company rubber-stamped a secret Site C contract increase. The night before the election writ, BC Hydro Chair Brad Bennett and board members got an update on cost overruns at the Site C dam and rubber-stamped an increase to the Peace River Hydro Partners main civil works contract, but BC Hydro was stubbornly keeping the dollar amounts secret. The NDP government referred the project to the BC Utilities Commission, which the BC Liberals refused to do. Premier John Horgan made the controversial decision to keep building the dam at a new budget of $10.7 billion. Number 8. On November 20th, 2017, BC Crown Corporation goes silent about its appearance in the Paradise Papers. The Breaker found BC Investment Management Corporation and its former CEO were named in the Paradise Papers, the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists' database of documents that were leaked from the Appleby Law Firm in Bermuda. BCIMC, the huge BC public sector pension fund, invested in a company called China Homes Limited, and in 2002, Douglas Pierce was a director of the Bermuda-listed company. BCIMC has shares in 69 entities with China in their name, amounting to nearly $1 billion of investments through March of 2016. But nobody at BCIMC wanted to talk to the Breaker about the Paradise Papers. Number 7. On March 15, 2017, dead KPMG executive listed as $150,000 donor to the BC Liberals. KPMG managing partner David McShane's name was listed in the Elections BC database as a major donor to the BC Liberals for several years after he died of cancer in 2004. KPMG told The Breaker that it was, quote, an inadvertent administrative error, end quote. KPMG is the auditor for BC Hydro and for BC Lottery Corporation. One of its executives, Gary Webster, was hired to review the Portman Toll Bridge and Site C projects, both of which have gone way over budget. In March, Special Prosecutor David Butcher and the RCMP began investigating indirect donations made by lobbyists to the BC Liberals. The NDP finally banned corporate and union donations and capped donations at $1,200 a year during the fall session of the legislature. And number six, on November 27th, November 27th, 2017, an exclusive that Richmond Farm sells for 11,000% over assessment. 20 acres of East Richmond farmland assessed for less than $85,000 sold in June for $9.2 million. Real estate agent Layla Yang tweeted the transaction in June, but it finally completed in October. New buyer Jia Shenda Investment Management Company is connected to Xuan Ming Wu, who has a condo in the Hotel Georgia Luxury Tower in downtown Vancouver. The property is on the corner of Sitaway and Blundell, north of a Sitaway farmland mansion that police say was the site of an illegal casino. The BC Civil Forfeiture Office is applying to take the $5 million property. Richmond City Council moved to limit the size of mansions built on farmland. That's part one of the top 10 most read stories in the Breaker.news for 2017. Now it's time on the Breaker.news podcast for Cascadia Calling, where we look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. First stop here in Vancouver in the Georgia Strait, from restaurants and stores to art galleries, here's a long list of businesses that Vancouver bid farewell to in 2017, compiled by Craig Takeuchi. Just a partial list, but you'll be shocked if you are in Vancouver, have lived in Vancouver, or ever visited Vancouver, you'll recognize some of these names that are gone. Calhoun's Bakery, HMV Canada, The Media Club, The Dover Arms Pub, Ingledew's Shoes, 5 Chevron gas stations closed and were sold to developers, Safeway and BC Liquor Store on Davie Street are gone, so is the Cloud 9 Revolving Restaurant and Landmark Hotel on Robson, that was once Vancouver's tallest building. Sears Canada stores in North Vancouver, Burnaby, Surrey, Langley, and Coquitlam are gone. The Cardiero Grocery, the Three Vets Outdoor Store, the Umbrella Shop, Nick's Spaghetti House, the West Ender Newspaper, and 24 Hours Vancouver, which was near and dear to my heart. I was part of that team for 6 years. All these businesses were victims in one way, shape, or another to technology such as e-commerce, to changing demographics, and, of course, the high real estate prices in Vancouver, the high rents, and the high taxes. In the Seattle Times, Seattle's Year of Reckoning, the silence breakers and other newsmakers who reshaped our region. Seattle Mayor Ed Murray, who seemed poised for re-election and greater success, was toppled even before Harvey Weinstein. Murray resigned after allegations surfaced that he sexually abused 5 teenagers decades ago. Murray was not charged with any crimes and denied the accusations. Hall of Fame quarterback Warren Moon faces a lawsuit from a female employee of his sports marketing firm. She alleges sexual harassment and battery. Moon took a leave of absence from his job as a Seahawks announcer soon after the lawsuit was filed in December. Amazon, now by far the city's largest employer and user of office space, bought Whole Foods Market and its 460 brick-and-mortar stores for $13.7 billion U.S., setting off waves of panic in the grocery business. Then it unveiled plans to select a city elsewhere for a second headquarters equal to its Seattle original, setting off waves of self-examination, or relief, in various quarters in Seattle. Voters elected Jenny Durkin, Seattle's first lesbian mayor. And port commissioners angered environmentalists by allowing an oil rig to dock in Seattle to prepare for drilling in the Arctic Ocean. They also upset Sonics fans with their opposition to the proposed NBA arena in SoDo. City Council later inked a deal to rebuild Key Arena for an NHL team and later an NBA team. And finally, the Oregonian in Portland, the 15 most bizarre Portland area crimes of 2017. One of them featured a man who carried the severed head of his mother into a small town grocery store on Mother's Day in what was the most bizarre criminal case in Portland's metro area in 2017. Other headlines included, truck full of eels overturns on US 101, dousing sedan with slithering sea creatures. There's also the watermelon-wielding suspects wanted in Oregon City flying fruit fracas. Then there was the man causes stir by smoking pot in Portland courtroom. And a kiss during visit with inmate proved deadly and led to a federal case. And finally, one of the most bizarre Portland area crimes of 2017 headlines was bank robber, take a chocolate, act normal, give me 50s. That's Cascadia calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. We're back with part two of the top 10 countdown of the most read stories in the Breaker.News for 2017, the first year of the Breaker.News. Counting down from number 5, July 14th, 2017, BC Liberal election postmortem heaps blame on Clark. The week before, the BC Liberal dynasty of 16 years officially ended with the swearing-in of NDP Premier John Horgan, the party held two meetings in Vancouver and Surrey to air grievances. Peter Fassbender, who was the one-term MLA for Surrey Fleetwood but defeated in the election, and had been the education minister and later the municipal taxis and transit minister, was the most vocal. The former ad man blamed Finance Minister Mike DeYoung for being too tight with the public purse, and as for Christy Clark, Fassbender said, "She lost it for us, period, end of story." Number 4, March 22nd, 2017, BC paying Gordon Wilson $600 a day whether he's working or not. Documents obtained by The Breaker show that Christy Clark patronage appointee Gordon Wilson filed expenses for 61 of 189 business days during the first 9 months of 2016 as the Buy BC LNG advocate. During the period, Wilson produced no reports and it was unclear what he was actually doing. Wilson did not respond for comment when The Breaker asked for it. His son Matt Wilson ran unsuccessfully for the Liberals against NDP's Nicholas Simons in the Sunshine Coast. One of the first things the new NDP government did was to fire Gordon Wilson. Premier John Horgan and Jobs Minister Bruce Ralston later apologized for saying that Wilson did nothing. He did file one report to justify his renewal in early 2014. That didn't stop Wilson from suing for defamation, but a November YouTube video urged settlement out of court. Number 3, November 8, 2017. Consultant declares Nanaimo Hospital on the verge of self-destruction. The Breaker was first to report that a Denver consultant found Nanaimo Regional General Hospital was rife with bullying, coercion, harassment, intimidation, lack of trust, nepotism, and favoritism. It was so bad. How bad was it? Well, it was so bad that the Vector Group report said that numerous staff members said they told their friends and families to take them to hospitals on the mainland for care if they ever get sick. The report said the hospital's toxic culture was past the tipping point. Part of the problem was the failed phase-in of the $174 million iHealth digital record system. Number 2, the runner-up on the top 10 list of most read stories in the Breaker.News for 2017. April 7, 2017. Many questions remain about Christy Clark's Dunbar dwelling. The Breaker took a closer look at the $3.5 million house that Christy Clark moved into in her final year as premier. It's registered in the name of Whitecaps owner Greg Kerfoot's right-hand man, Nevin Sanga. Kerfoot's Whitecaps received millions of dollars in grants for their UBC training center and are an anchor tenant of the public-owned BC Place Stadium. But Clark, her aides, and even her lawyer did not answer the Breaker's questions about her rental agreement. Clark also drove a Buick SUV supplied by party donor Duick. In BC, premiers' houses have been the subject of scandal. In 1991, SOCRED Premier Bill Vanderzam stepped down after a conflict of interest investigation into his sale of his fantasy garden world in Richmond. In 1999, NDP Premier Glenn Clark stepped down after a probe into his East Vancouver home, where an applicant for a gambling license did repairs on his deck. And now here we are, the most read story of 2017 in the Breaker.News, number one on the top 10. August 3rd, 2017, the headline was, "Showdown at Penticton Caucus Retreat Was Really Ugly." On May 9th, Christy Clark lost the BC Liberal majority. The Greens supported the minority NDP to force a no-confidence vote on June 29th, and Lieutenant Governor Judith Cauchon opted to give John Horgan a chance to form a new government. But Clark surprised BC one more time. During a late July caucus retreat in Penticton, she posted her resignation on Facebook. On the last day of July in Vancouver, she held her last news conference, and she claimed that, quote, every single person in the room, end quote, asked her to stay as leader. But that was not true. The Breaker was first to report that Abbotsford South MLA Daryl Plekis stood up and demanded that Clark's leadership be reviewed. If not, he would quit. Rich Coleman immediately became the interim leader, and Plekis, well, he later quit the Liberal caucus to sit as the speaker as an independent, and giving the NDP and Green Alliance an extra seat cushion so that the speaker wouldn't have to break any tie votes. Five Liberal caucus members who voted for Clark's clone speech and ex-Surrey mayor and ex-Tory MP Diane Watts are now running to replace Coleman on the first week of February. But Ben Stewart is running to fill the seat that Clark vacated. And in late 2018, BC voters will decide whether to stick with the first-past-the-post system or change the voting system to proportional representation. Never a dull moment here in British Columbia. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. So, for this week, the last week of 2017 and first week of 2018, we award the goodness of British Columbia's favorite dessert treat to you. You, the listener. Yes, you. Whether this is your first time listening to the Breaker.News podcast, or you've read every single story on the website, thank you for your time and attention. Without you, this would be a waste of time. As the Breaker is 1 year old on New Year's Day, I hope that you have learned something more about the issues and institutions and the people who influence British Columbia, the west coast of Canada. Please join us in 2018. Tell your friends. Tell your enemies too, as I like to say. With your help, I hope to buy everyone a real Nanaimo bar someday. And you can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Just send me an email, bob@thebreaker.news. We'll take a cup of kindness yet for all that time. Should all acquaintance be forgotten, but to me. Well, that's it for the Breaker.News podcast for December 31st, 2017. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas. Email bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You also can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. If you missed any of that, just send me an email, bob@thebreaker.news. Thanks for following The Breaker in 2017. Much more to come in 2018. Have a safe, happy, and prosperous new year.